Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
We begin our program with a story about a possible connection between the president of Russia and the killing of a former spy. Jim Tedder has the story.
Russian President Vladimir Putin probably approved the killing of a Russian spy turned dissident, says a top British government investigator. Alexander Litvinenko was the Russian spy turned dissident, or critic of the government. He was exiled in Britain after criticizing Putin and describing him, among other things, as a pedophile, or someone who sexually abuses children. Robert Owen, a retired judge, served as the chairman of the year-long inquiry. On Thursday, he announced that two Russian agents were responsible for the November 2006 poisoning of Litvinenko. It occurred at the Millennium Hotel in central London, just a few meters from the U.S. Embassy. For nearly 9 years since her husband's death, Marina Litvinenko has been demanding answers. Speaking to reporters outside the courthouse in London, she said she was, of course, very pleased by the outcome. She added, "The words my husband spoke on his deathbed, when he accused Mr. Putin of his murder, have been proved true in an English court with a high standard of independence and fairness." In Moscow, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said, "We regret that a purely criminal case has been politicized and has darkened the general atmosphere of bilateral relations." Litvinenko was an agent of the Russian Federal Security Service, the Russian spy agency that came after the KGB. In 1998, he became an outspoken critic of Putin and sought asylum in Britain. He criticized Putin in an article and described the Russian leader as a pedophile. Russia rejected the accusation. In early November 2006, Litvinenko agreed to meet with Russian agents Andrei Lugovoy and Dmitry Kovtun. British officials said they added radioactive polonium to his tea. Polonium is a highly toxic substance, and just one microgram, about the size of a speck of dust, is enough to kill a person. Litvinenko quickly became ill and died 23 days later. Prime Minister David Cameron's spokeswoman said the British government was considering what actions to take. "It is not the way for any state, let alone a permanent member of the UN Security Council, to behave," the spokeswoman said. "Regrettably, these findings confirm what we and previous governments believed." London financier Bill Browder is a human rights advocate and a critic of Putin. He said Britain will not take any action. He said, "It comes down to money. There's a lot of Russian money sloshing around London, and I believe that there's a concern among certain members of the government that that money would be less available if Britain took a moral stand on some of these issues." I'm Jim Tedder.
Police are investigating threats against dozens of schools this week in 7 U.S. states. Searches failed to find bombs or other dangers. Threats were called in to at least 26 schools in New Jersey on Tuesday. Most were to schools in suburbs of New York City, police said. Other threats were called in Tuesday to schools in Maryland, Iowa, Massachusetts, Delaware, Arizona, and Florida. Wednesday brought more bomb threats to schools in Delaware and Arizona. The threats come at a time polling shows Americans worried about terrorist attacks. New Jersey police officials said voices on the threatening phone calls sounded altered by computers. The calls were traced to Bakersfield, California, police said. At Clifton High School, a voicemail warned of a bomb. A separate call warned of a mass shooting at the school later on Tuesday, said Sergeant Robert Bracken of Clifton Police Department. The responses to the threats varied, according to news reports. Some schools moved students to other buildings while officials searched the threatened schools. In New Jersey, some students said they waited outside their schools for an hour or more without coats in below freezing temperatures. Other schools closed for the day, and some kept students locked down in their classrooms. In New Jersey, police used dogs trained to smell explosives. Police and school officials said Tuesday they could not say if most threats came from a single group or person. They also said they did not know the reason threats were made. Some police said some calls appear the work of copycats. Copycats are people who repeat an action taken by somebody else. Last month, threats were made to school administration offices in New York City and Los Angeles. Emails warned of attacks on multiple schools in the two cities. Los Angeles officials decided to close their schools that day, but New York City officials kept schools open. No bombs were found. Los Angeles and New York are the largest school districts in the United States. The threats are making some students and parents nervous. NBC4 TV News in New York reported some students said they decided not to return to school Tuesday after the all-clear signal was given because they remained afraid. Last month, President Barack Obama observed the 3rd anniversary of the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. A lone gunman killed his mother and then drove to the school where he killed 20 first graders and 6 educators. In Virginia, Prince William County school and police officials met Monday with parents to discuss recent bomb threats at 4 county high schools. InsideNova.com reported that officials told parents most people planning school shootings do not advertise shootings. We have to take the threat seriously, but we also have to balance our approach so that we're not scaring the kids, said Police Lieutenant David Burghardt, according to InsideNova.com. But a school official told parents they should tell their children to report any threats they hear about from classmates or others.
As many as 8,000 Cuban migrants have been stuck in Costa Rica after Nicaragua denied them entry. Earlier this week, the first of those migrants arrived to the U.S. George Groh has more.
The first of thousands of Cuban migrants stranded in Costa Rica have entered the United States. As many as 8,000 Cuban migrants have been stuck in Costa Rica for several months. they traveled from their homes to Ecuador, through Colombia and Panama, and into Costa Rica. Nicaragua then denied the migrants entry. The migrants left Cuba for the United States. They said they feared that they would miss the opportunity to seek asylum in the U.S. Recently improved relations between the U.S. and Cuba could end a policy that gives Cubans asylum rights if they arrive by land. U.S. and Central American leaders reached an agreement in December. The deal permits the migrants to be flown from Costa Rica to El Salvador before being taken to the U.S.-Mexico border by bus. The migrants arrived in Miami Sunday, after 180 of them first crossed the U.S.-Mexico border last week at Laredo, Texas. The plan will be reviewed by the Central American governments before it is expanded to allow the other Cubans to leave for the U.S. Officials estimate it will take 28 airplane flights to get all of the Cuban migrants to El Salvador. I'm George Grow.
Ain't nothing I can say, nothing I can do. I feel so bad.
About 1% of visitors who arrived in the U.S. by air or sea overstayed their visas last year. Jim Dressback has more on the story.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security said Tuesday, about 45 million visitors came to the U.S. between October 1, 2014 and September 30, 2015. Some were business or pleasure travelers in the U.S. with visas that expired with time. Others were in the U.S. under a program that reviews them in advance. DHS said that by September 30, 2015, about 416,500 had not left the U.S. Another 66,500 people stayed past their leave dates, but later left the U.S. The number of visitors who overstayed in the U.S. was lowest among 38 countries that are part of the visa waiver program. VWP allows some travelers into the United States for tourism or business for 90 days or less without a visa. Countries with the highest rates of visitors who did not leave were Djibouti, Bhutan, Burkina Faso, and Afghanistan. The report did not include numbers of visitors that entered by land, especially visitors from Canada and Mexico. More than 200 million people entered the U.S. at land border crossings in 2015. The department says it will try to include them in future reports. The report did not include the kind of visas recorded in the survey. DHS says it would like the report to review more F, M, and J visas. An F1 visa allows non-immigrant students into the U.S. M1 visas are issued to students who are working in the U.S. or training for a job. J visas are issued to students in exchange programs. Congress passed new rules in December that tighten the waiver program. Any citizen from Iran, Iraq, Syria, or Sudan, or anyone who traveled to one of those countries in the past 5 years, is not eligible for a waiver and must get a visa to enter the U.S. I'm Jim Dressback.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho.
A recent study using UN data finds that the world's fish catch is underreported by 30%. Mario Ritter has more.
The amount of fish caught worldwide is much larger than has been reported, and that could mean serious problems for the environment and nations that depend on fisheries. A new estimate places the world fish catch at 109 million metric tons. That is 32 million tons higher than countries have been reporting yearly. The same report notes that the world's fish catch has been declining since the late 1990s. Countries report their industrial catches to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, but they do not report other kinds of fishing. These include the catches of small commercial fisheries, what are called artisanal fisheries, and fishing for recreation and individual food. Daniel Pauly at the University of British Columbia in Canada led the study. He noted that a huge amount of some catches is thrown away.
For example, shrimp trawlers retain only the shrimp, and the fish that they catch, often 8 to 10 times as much as the shrimp, get thrown away.
Pauly told VOA that better estimates of the actual global catch will help ensure there will be enough fish in the future. Researchers also found ways the world's fisheries are changing. They found that fishing fleets of larger nations are catching fish in the waters of developing countries more and more. Pauly said he was surprised by the amount of fishing done by foreign fleets in competition with local fishers.
In West Africa, the figure that was most astonishing is the enormous role of foreign fishing, of European and Asian vessels fishing legally or illegally and competing against local fishers. On the other hand, for the U.S., Australia, and some developing countries such as the Bahamas, what was apparent is the enormous contribution of recreational fisheries, which also never get reported, to the FAO.
Researchers say inaccurate data also harms the development and supervision of effective policy and management measures. I'm Mario Ritter.
This is What's Trending Today. In less than 2 weeks, the state of Iowa will vote on its choices for the 2016 Democratic and Republican presidential nominees. The Iowa caucus begins a months-long process of selecting presidential candidates. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont is one of the Democratic presidential candidates. On Thursday, he released a new ad targeting Iowa voters. The 60-second ad is set to a famous song from the 1960s, the folk rock band Simon and Garfunkel's America.
I've come to look for America.
The video shows images of Iowa farms, coffee shops, families at kitchen tables, and thousands of Sanders supporters. The ad is designed to show Sanders' growing crowd of supporters made up of everyday Americans. Simon and Garfunkel trended worldwide on Twitter and on Facebook. Simon and Garfunkel and Bernie Sanders was also a top 10 Google search on Thursday. On social media, people praised Sanders for his choice of avoiding attacking other candidates and instead focusing on voters, as one New York Times headline said. As Simon and Garfunkel's famous line, "They've all come to look for America," plays, so too does video footage of Sanders supporters.
They've all come to look for America. All come to look for America.
Twitter user Hillary Crisson tweeted, "This is what political ads should look like. No intimidating, no trash talking, just Simon and Garfunkel." And Twitter user DS Friends tweeted, "Not in any way an endorsement, but this is a well-done political ad. Hashtag emotion wins." Twitter user S. Trimmel said, "Best political ad of the season. Brings a tear to my eye. Maybe yours, too." Bernie Sanders himself tweeted, "This campaign is not about Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, or Donald Trump. This campaign is about you." And that's what's trending today. I'm Ashley Thompson. We leave you with everyday grammar. This week, we conclude our four-part verb tense series. The topic today is perfect progressive tenses. Jill Robbins and John Russell explain.
For English learners, the perfect progressive tenses can be scary, but they are more straightforward than you might think. When you talk about grammar, perfect means complete, and progressive means unfinished. Perfect progressive sentences focus on the completion of an action that is, was, or will be in progress. Think about this sentence in the past perfect progressive.
I had been waiting for 3 years by the time my application was approved.
In this example, the emphasis is on duration of the first verb, waiting. Perfect progressive tenses often answer the question, how long? There are three perfect progressive tenses. The present perfect progressive, the past perfect progressive, and the future perfect progressive.
Let's start with the present perfect progressive. You form the present perfect progressive by using have been or has been, followed by an ing verb. For instance,
she has been sitting in class since early this morning.
The action, sitting, is continuing. But the emphasis is on the completed part of the action. Here are some more examples.
I have been waiting for 20 minutes. I have been studying since I was a child. It has been snowing all day long.
In all of these sentences, the emphasis is on how the finished activity relates to the present. A time reference is not required to use the present perfect progressive. Sometimes, we use it to refer to recently completed actions. Imagine your friend comes to your house with red, puffy eyes. You might say,
"Your eyes are red. Have you been crying?"
Or you notice that a coworker is looking tanned. You might ask,
"You look tanned. Have you been sunbathing?"
Remember that stative verbs cannot be used in any progressive tense. A stative verb describes unchanging situations, often mental states such as realize, appear, and seem. You should not say,
"I've been knowing you for a long time."
If you have a stative verb, use the present perfect.
"I have known you for a long time."
Almost all native speakers will contract or shorten the pronoun that comes before have or has.
"I have been"
will sound like
"I've been."
Expert grammarian and teacher Betty Azar tells English learners,
"Don't expect slow, careful pronunciation of helping verbs in normal conversation." Let us move on to the past perfect progressive. The past perfect progressive emphasizes the duration of a past action before another action happened. For example,
"I had been smoking for 10 years before I quit."
You form the past perfect progressive by using had been followed by an ing verb. Notice how the past perfect progressive often includes the adverbs for and since to express duration. You will also see the adverbs before, when, or by the time used to introduce a second action. The second action uses the simple past tense. Here are some more examples.
I had been studying for 12 years by the time I graduated from high school. She had been living there since she was a child. He had been teaching for 12 years before he was certified.
The past perfect progressive can also describe a recently completed action. For instance,
my clothes were wet because it had been raining. He was talking loudly because he had been drinking. We will end with the future perfect progressive. The future perfect progressive describes the duration of an action as it relates to a future event. There are two ways to form the future perfect progressive. Both require two actions. One is by using will have been plus a present participle, followed by when or by the time and the second action. For example,
I will have been working for 35 years by the time I retire.
Notice that the second planned action, retire, is in the simple present. The simple future is never used with the second action. The other way to form the future perfect progressive is using be plus going to have been, plus a present participle followed by when or by the time and the second action. The order of the actions can be reversed with either form. For example,
by the time the plane arrives, I am going to have been waiting for 5 hours.
With the future perfect progressive, it is not always clear if the ing verb started in the past or will start in the future. For example,
the doctor will have been working for 24 hours by the time his shift is finished.
The future perfect progressive is rare because it is difficult to know the duration of an activity relative to another future event. And those are the three perfect progressive tenses in English. We have been talking about verb tenses for several weeks now. It is time to move on to other topics. We will leave you with a present perfect progressive song by the music band Foreigner. Been listening to Everyday Grammar on VOA Learning English. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
We still have a few more 2016 VOA calendars to give away. If you would like one before they all run out, write to us at learningenglish@voanews.com.
In your email, let us know how long you have been studying English. Try to use the present perfect progressive verb tense from this week's Everyday Grammar.
That's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.